Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do the thing first?
Yeah, go ahead and do the thing first.
You're listening to Why Are People Into That? With your host, Dina Horn. To learn more about Why Are People Into That, visit whyarepeopleintothat.com.
And who are you?
Oh, I'm Allison Moon.
Let's do one more. I might use that one, but let's do it. You're listening to episode 23 of Why Are People Into That, a podcast for the insatiable. I'm your host, Tina Horn, and my incredible sponsors today and every day are Smitten Kitten, the sex toy store for everybody. Visit smittenkittenonline.com to find all the big dicks we talk about in this episode. Larger toys usually cost more, but for the first time, Smitten Kitten is offering a special discount to Why Are People Into That listeners. Simply enter code Y, that's W-H-Y, when you check out to get a whopping 20% off your order. My guest today is sex educator T. Pantherella, talking about big bodies, enormous toys, voluminous orgasms, basically everyone and everything that takes up a lot of space. So, lay back, open up, and take. Why are people into size queens? Cool. Yeah. Hi, T. Pantherella.
Hi, Tina.
It's kind of it's a bit of a mouthful, but I like it. It makes me think of a jungle cat that I should be scared of, but scared of in a way that maybe I actually want to be in its clutches.
I think that's super accurate.
Yeah.
And I imagine it T. dot Pantherella. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine that moment there, that pause.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm imagining that pause. How are you on this sunny but snowy Sunday?
I'm so good. Thanks for coming all the way out to Queens.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. I had to get on the F going downtown and then transfer to the uptown. You know, it's Sunday travels, but it was worth it.
Yeah, Queens and Queens is appropriate.
Yeah, exactly.
Always.
And there's a lot more snow still, like pure snow on the ground that is unadulterated by the filth of the city, which you see in stark relief when it snows. You're like, oh, that filth is actually around us all the time, but yeah. You see it in the snow and it's like so much more disgusting.
And then when the snow melts and you see all of the piles of poop and cigarette butts and
yeah,
it's charming.
And it's all over your shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the charming world we're living in right now. So T. Pantherella is an educator. You said former performance artist, but I don't think you're that reformed.
Yeah, I can't really quit it. But, you know, I used to perform pretty regularly, like in kind of New York queer nightlife.
Yeah, I've seen you. I've seen you dance.
Yeah. My burlesque alter ego is Afro Titty.
Yes, that's right. Of course.
But, you know, she is no longer.
Mm. Oh, yeah, she's been put to rest. Was there a reason for that?
I had a hip injury.
Ugh.
I like, you know, my pieces always kind of revolved around like throwing myself on the floor and like writhing around and pulling things out of different orifices.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went a little bit too hard.
Oh, that's how you threw your hip out.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's gotta go.
Go, and glory, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, did it, what, were you, like, doing a live performance?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you have to?
I kept going. I kept going and didn't really realize until I was already in the car home that I really, like, hurt myself.
I can also imagine in the New York City neo-burlesque that if you had a horrible injury halfway
through. If I impaled myself.
Then people would be like, ooh, this is so interesting. This is so edgy.
Yeah. I can imagine it totally working with anything, like a piece of the, you know, reclaimed Brooklyn bar pushing itself into my pelvis.
Yeah.
Being glorious and grotesque.
Yeah. They're like, did she take it too far? Well, in all seriousness, I'm sorry to hear that.
No worries.
But it seems like you are doing better, and also you probably could still continue to perform regardless. Yeah. So yeah, I don't think I'm imagining that your days of throwing yourself around is not, those days aren't over.
Certainly not.
Yeah. but as an educator, mm-hmm. We actually first met at Babeland.
Yeah.
And remind, what was your official role at Babeland?
I was the premier services coordinator.
Right. The fancy party.
I call it the bachelorette wrangler.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly interact with a lot of bachelorettes, a lot of birthday girls,
yeah.
a lot of college campuses to, you know, provide them with private workshops and toy parties and all of that.
Yeah. That was cool. Yeah. And then also you would teach workshops yourself. Yeah. I've definitely seen you do that.
I love selling things.
Yeah.
I love teaching a thing. I love selling a thing. So it was a pretty good run.
Yeah. It is nice to sell things that you think people should actually have.
Yeah, definitely.
Like dildos and lube and harnesses and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it's like, you totally need this. This is good for you.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, do you like selling things in general, or do you just like selling sexy things?
I've been really lucky, and retail is something that I'm really good at and I love, but I've only had to work in specialty retail that was, like, along the lines of who I am. So, like, I worked at a plus size consignment shop called Redress.
Nice.
So, like, you know, selling clothes and selling, like, fat clothes and, like, a fat or, like, a radical fat atmosphere. And then at Babeland, right? So selling things that I already am passionate about.
Well, you also, I don't know if this is on your tax forms, but you also are just always so impeccably dressed. I feel like when I think of you, I'm like, well, like, she does this, and also just always so, you just always look so hot.
Thank you. I love an ensemble.
Yeah. Well, it shows. And we appreciate it. We, the people of the world, who get to enjoy your outfits.
Thank you, Tina and all.
you're an icon. You inspire me to feel like maybe I, too, can feel a little better today.
You are so ferocious, Tina.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Don't get me started. I mean, or get me started, do.
Well, let's be ferocious together about our subject today.
Yeah, I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about why are people into size queens. Can you define size queen for us?
Okay, so I think if I were to define size queen, I would say that a size queen is a person of any gender, orientation and affiliation who has a love and an obsession and a preference for things that are just bigger, for like size, for girth, for heft. And so the idea of either like wielding those things, wearing those things, or like, you know, being stimulated and fucked and done by those things.
Yeah. Gosh, and when you put it that way, it sounds very American. It's like bigger, it's better, faster,
very
more.
Very patriotic.
Yeah. Taking up lots of space and
seriously spreading across.
The empire of the world.
Spreading across the masses, filling it up.
Yeah, space race.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I love queen as a ultimately gender neutral identity or designation or honorarium.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, I think it's amazing, and it's interesting though. I feel like the origin of size queen actually might be sort of like the way that whore is often used, be like, I'm a shoe whore. Well, it's like,
it's covetous, right? Like the idea of wanting to have these things, claim those things, or you know, or think that maybe they're not superior, but
just like, a preferable,
like, yeah,
yeah,
like a collector of the riches or the,
oh, yeah,
the shoes, like, or the, like, dicks or whatever,
like Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine diving into your vault of giant dicks and swimming around.
I love that. I mean, I'm also imagining like giant platform heels and giant pendants, and
yeah,
maybe it's just because I'm talking to you and that is what you favor, because it's true. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll talk about dicks in a second, but you do really favor these like outsized pieces of jewelry and very, you know, if volume, if a bigger, like louder volume is like a bigger sized,
uh-huh,
sound, then I, you know, bright colors and like loud patterns and
yeah, everything. Like I love shape, I love size, mm-hmm, obviously. Like I think that with my body, like I really like wearing not oversized clothes, but sometimes oversized, but things, yeah, that kind of create a really voluminous or interesting silhouette,
mm-hmm,
or my body as that silhouette. So I feel like even when clothing is tight, just kind, mm-hmm, of emphasizing interesting shapes and kind of contrasts with like size, like big, smaller, but big.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not even like a traditional hourglass, but more of the idea of, you know, maybe my shoulders are really big and so are my calves.
Yeah.
Or maybe my ass is really big, but I'm like minimizing what my chest looks like. So just kind of really playing around with kind of dramatic.
I love that idea. I love the idea of, I think it's very revolutionary to say, okay, classic shapes, like the hourglass shape, are great and you can play with that, but you can also say like maybe somebody has a different shape and claiming that I think that's a very powerful thing that fashion can do,
mm-hmm,
that queer femmes have helped me to appreciate from my scrappy tomboy beginnings. Now I feel like I can appreciate that a little bit more. I actually the other day, speaking of size, pulled out these boots that I've had for like 6 years that I got at a thrift store in San Francisco, and I couldn't zip them up.
Mm-hmm.
I used to wear them all the time, and my calves are just... I actually have that problem with boots a lot, that my calves just do not fit in them, and then I want, like, I want to have that silhouette of the sleek boot, but my calves are like, we have other ideas for how things should look.
New York will do that to your calves.
Mm.
Like walking in the city, living here will just kind of make your calves become so like brolic. Brolic, yeah. I love that word. Brolic.
Brolic.
It means just very muscular.
Oh, I don't think I know that word. That's amazing.
I learned it when I was in high school.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Yeah. It's a throwback.
Yeah, well yeah, I guess it's
I'm gonna send you some links to some wide calf boots though.
Oh my god.
That are really, really like badass and cunty, but yeah.
My god, I think I can handle badass and cunty. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes.
Got you.
Okay, so let's talk about cock. Or insertables in general.
Yeah.
Right? So one of the things that's really great about Babeland is that Babeland sells a variety of insertables, and definitely, you know, from the less intimidating, you know, mm-hmm, basically like pinky sized, to ones that people think are a joke, but it's not a joke. Not a joke, mm-hmm, at all. And of course, Babeland's not the only place that sells those. But yeah, when you work there, you kind of you get used to talking to people and understanding their ideas of their relationship to what it means to have different size things inserted into their hulks.
Uh-huh. I feel like, and this is not an overarching truth, but for the majority of customers that I interacted with, I feel like a lot of like straight cis women who are in whatever relationships, they kind of have this conception that, or this idea that the thing that they should put inside of their vages or any orifice, like it should be a little prim thing, because cunts are little and prim.
Right.
Like what does that even mean?
You know
what
I mean?
Like it stretches, it moves, it does all of these things. Just the idea of like it being barely a sliver inside of the body.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of like high end sex toy stores, their offerings represent that because people are afraid of size. It can be intimidating, even if it's you know, what they secretly crave.
Right. That's true. And also, slight side note, I'm going to go out on a limb and say the most shocking thing to me about working there and interacting with the customers was the lack of understanding of vaginal anatomy with regards to the Benoit balls, which are any kind of Kegel exercisers, which of course many people were coming in asking for them, not really understanding what they were for because of that book, which now has a movie that, you know, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you could probably guess. I don't even, I feel like I'm so sick of hearing it, I don't even want to talk about it. But you know, they would come in and then you would, you know, talk about inserting these balls that are basically like barbells for your internal muscles, and so many people were concerned about them getting lost. Yeah. And you know, you have to be like, have you heard of the cervix? Do you? And they're like, oh, I've heard of it. I'm like, okay, so it's this, it'll keep, it's like a door. it won't go into your tummy. Like, you won't lose them in your tummy. And, you know, and then of course, and then for some reason people have the opposite notion about the ass, and they don't realize that the other end of your ass is your mouth, and they think that they can just put whatever in there. It's like, why do people have that backwards? Because there's no cervix in the rectum.
No. I do think that a lot of people putting all the things up their ass, people are afraid to buy butt toys, right? So, like, sure, they, like, will just say, oh, I have this thing, this, right, like, thing, I'm going to put it just a little ways up there. Again, not understanding their anatomy, right? So it just kind of keeps going.
Yeah.
Swallows up. Yeah, no, people don't know what their cervix is. They don't know. I mean, I feel like I interacted with a lot of folk who didn't even really understand, like, where their urine came from.
Yeah.
And that just speaks to, like, the country we live in. Totally. And the state of sex education.
Yeah.
Here. I don't know. I think also, like, the interesting idea that, you know, a vibrator that you buy, like a first-time vibe, has to be super small and, right, like, really, really, like, not powerful at all. But if you, like, are meeting a partner, right? Like, say they're a partner with an attached dick, that it has to be big.
Right, right.
Or,
right,
like, or it says something about that person, right? So, kind of wondering, I don't know, like, where, like, who are we trying to prove what to?
Yeah.
And what people really think pleasure is, right? Like, so where are individuals getting pleasure from when they're fucking themselves?
Right. Are they fucking themselves at all?
Right.
Yeah.
Or do they just have this toy?
Yeah.
Because they think they should have it.
So what is sexy about putting really big things in holes?
Yeah. I think it's like the stretch and the give.
Yeah.
And the challenge. Even if it isn't really a challenge. But, like, the initial, like, the idea.
Even if it's easy, it's still impressive.
Right. Like, the idea of, like, of this moment when you have this implement in your hand, or maybe it's, like, being kind of, it's on your thigh or your belly, or you're touching it on someone else's body, and you can feel it. Mm-hmm. You can feel its girth. You can feel the weight, and then that immediate moment of it kind of pushing past and in, something about it is just, like, everything for me.
Yeah.
I statements.
Well, you're, like, making it disappear.
Yeah, like, you're just kind of containing it.
Mm-hmm.
You're containing it. And even with, like, I feel like for my body, like, even with the largest implements and body parts that I've ever, like, had inside of my body, at some point, even when it's really intense, it does, your body kind of absorbs it.
Yeah,
so, and warms it and takes it.
Oh, God. Yes.
I know.
That reminds me that I want to talk about this word stretch. So, in my experience as a professional top, I had a lot of people who are new to being penetrated, mostly cis men being new to being penetrated in their buttholes, and they have this concept that they had fetishized or sexualized of being trained to be stretched, right? And in the fantasy of that, I completely understand, but I think that there was a lack of understanding of what actually happens with the engorgement of blood and the elasticity and the difference between the ass and the vagina in terms of the capacity to do so. So let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. Like, have you experienced people having sort of that misconception as well? Or people being worried like, oh, if I put that big dick inside me, I'll get stretched out and then I won't be tight anymore and I'll be incontinent. You see what, you know what I'm talking about?
Definitely. I think that what most people don't realize, or a lot of people don't realize, is that, you know, the penis isn't the only, like, body part to have erectile tissue, right?
That's right.
Erectile tissue, like, is in most people's genitals, or everyone's genital. Everyone has erectile tissue.
Totally.
And it stretches from kind of, like, the front where the clit or the penis is, all the way back through the perineum, the taint, to the anus, to the anal opening. So all of that tissue has the ability to fill with blood and become engorged and delicious and, you know, and very, very pliable and just open and up. Not opened up, but open and up, right? Like, our bodies kind of become erect.
Yeah.
And so with that in mind, the, you know, vagina, the vaginal opening kind of opens up almost like an envelope, right? Like, it kind of pushes up and out, and really kind of, I was going to say blossoms, which is like,
that's,
whatever. That's like a whole, that's like.
That's so like,
I know.
Harlequin romance.
Gosh.
That's fine.
I don't know
no,
any
it
other
does.
Word. I don't want to say blossoms though, but I just did. Okay. So it's fine. It does that thing I just said. And.
Swells.
It swells. It, yeah. It swells like the ocean. It swells like a wave. And well, it does, and can accommodate just so much, especially with like time and patience and arousal. But there's that huge misconception that, you know, if you, you know, put a finger up your ass, you're going to be incontinent for the rest of your life.
Right.
Or if you use a sex toy and like a front hole, your man won't like your loose pussy anymore.
Right.
And that also kind of comes from a place of like complete like body negativity and misogyny.
Yeah.
Like the idea
course.
That pussies get loose.
Mm.
And
yeah, once they've been used.
Right.
And then they're, you know, no longer useful.
I was in the Miss Les competition a few years ago.
Oh, cool.
Like, I don't even know what year, God, but, like, it was, like, maybe 4 years ago. And one of the contestants that I was performing alongside, they made a joke about, like, Octomom, the woman.
Oh, yes.
And, like, her loose pussy. And I was just, like, ew. Like, what are we even talking about? You
that's
know, like,
a very, that's a very queeny joke, and not in the sense that we were talking. It's a very drag queen joke, right?
Sure.
That's, like, this sort of, like, bordering on misogynistic kind of humor that drag queens favor, sometimes to hilarity and sometimes to shut the fuck up.
Right.
Get out
of
my face.
The cunt, the ass, is a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it will be, right? So the bigger, the things you put in it, you put in big things, and you kind of work around those large things. If you, I think there's totally something to be said about, like, being fucked, and, like, letting a thing happen to your, like, orifice. But in my experience, even when I'm feeling super submissive and letting a thing happen to me, my cunt, no matter what I do, is still doing its own thing, right?
Yeah.
So still taking, still pushing back, still doing grabbing, pulling, contracting. So
yeah.
I think that being fucked with large things is a workout.
Yeah, exactly. Just, I loved what you said about weightlifting, you know, that. I think there is, like, an alienation from that part of your anatomy, that part of your physiological response, that we think that it would be different from what we know about our bodies that happens when we go to the gym or even when we, you know, in the normal course of human bodily functions and events, So what is psychologically hot about, like, seeing, for example, like, somebody, like, strapping on a really big cock?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's, you know, the idea that, in my experience, when I'm the one kind of, if not strapping on, like, wielding the cock, kind of the experience that I have in that moment is kind of just knowing that I have this this like tool, mm-hmm. right? Like this like implement that has a purpose, that has a really hot purpose. And so when I see someone like wearing a really big like strap-on dick, I know that that's what they're thinking, and that's really hot for me. Kind of imagining their thought process. I'm also a brat, so that kind of has something to do with it. Like, I know what you're thinking.
You're a bratty top.
I am a bratty top. I'm a real bratty top. But it's kind of like, I know what you're thinking. I know what you want to do with that. And also the idea kind of like, you know, like the idea that they're going to take a thing. That they're going to they're gonna take a thing with that big thing. It's just it's really really fucking hot.
I mean, I get, I'm trying to think of what is the appeal of seeing somebody sucking a really big dick or taking a really big dick. I mean, it really kind of just makes the bottom so powerful and impressive, and whether you are, that's your subjective experience as the bottom who's sucking the big dick or taking the big dick, or even if you're watching somebody do that, it's like you're like, I don't know, it's just so impressive. You want to give them all the gold stars.
Definitely. I think even if the moment is, you know, even if the sub or the bottom, the person who's like taking it in their mouth or their ass or their front hole, their cunt, even if they're like having a hard time with it, if it's like, you know, some like consensual non-consent or like something's being like forced upon them in that scene, they're still taking it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even if they can't like get it
giving
in their mouth.
Giving it the old college try.
Exactly. They're still, like, it's effort.
Yeah.
It's effort to, like, contain, like, or, like an implement that just has so much, like, visceral power.
Yeah. You know, it also makes me think about how we are socialized, well, you know, like, women are socialized to be small and not take up a lot of space. I think in general we're taught, you know, that sex, should be, you know, private at best and ashamed, you know, shameful at worst, and that, you know, it, we it's not polite to talk about it, and it's certainly not polite to do it in front of all of your friends on a fun weekend. And so being able to just really, I mean, it's kind of like, I always think about music, and it's, you know, it's kind of like punk music or like really heavy rock or like really just like super intense, like a really intense beat, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
It's like, I'm tired of being told to be quiet, so I'm just gonna like really fucking go there to almost surreal extremes.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it just reminds me of kind of like when I, like for me, like fisting is my my favorite thing in the entire world.
Fisting,
because you totally
don't need a dildo to put something very large inside someone.
Yeah, I love hands. I love hands, and I feel like even kind of a smaller hand makes a really big impact for most people's bodies when it's balled in a fist, right? So, I just think that I feel like it. At my best, I feel like I make the most amazing animalistic noises that reminds me of kind of like punk music sometimes.
Yeah.
And I really impress myself with the things I make and the things I can do when fisting is happening.
You know, it makes me think about how fisting is like the last bastion of obscenity in porn.
Yeah.
And, you know, I haven't actually done an episode about fisting yet, despite it being a constant topic in everybody's lives. I feel it should be. But I always try to imagine, like, what is it that people are so scared about when it comes to fisting, and why why are people so ready to jump to censoring it? And I think that it has to do with a fear of really big things going into people, because really, like, any fist is going to be bigger than, like, the biggest attached penis. So there's an idea that it's, And I think people also kind of think of it as like the whole arm, you know, even though because the power of the whole arm, I don't know. I mean, it's, people just think of it as wrong, but of course it feels so right partially because of how completely it can fill you up.
Right. I think that there's also probably this visceral, concerning reaction to the idea of like ripping, right? Like that fist is gonna it's gonna create a type of damage,
right?
That we're going to call obscene,
right?
So I think that
and then no one could possibly consent to that,
right? Which is like which is curious to me because I feel like fisting is such a, like you said, it almost feels so right because, well, it doesn't almost, but it feels so right a lot most of the time because the fist just fits so beautifully in most orifices. I was thinking most because the mouth is, you know, fists kind of can be a little clunky for your mouth, but whatever.
I've seen it done.
Yes.
It just slides. Dana Diarmond.
Right.
Anyway.
I mean, just looking at the shape of like a fist, right, kind of, it has angles, it has kind of a curved, like a curved oval egg shape that I just feel works really well in the ass or like the cunt. And I don't know. And so like one finger, two finger, three finger, hand, fist, that just makes so much sense to the progression of what penetration can be. And I think also it's just kind of a fear of like that, almost like that, that really intense reaction that the fistie can express.
Yeah.
Right? I think maybe like that roar or like that, like, you know, almost like this is just from my own experience, like that, almost like that this is kind of like not childbirth, but like I feel like sometimes it's just like you're like kind of just completely like just doing a thing, like your body is just doing a thing, and what comes out, what you're expressing, can be so much and can be so can just be perceived as just so unlike any thing that traditional porn is. That I imagine the folk who consider it obscene just don't know what to do with it when they actually have seen it, if they've ever seen. Like, I wonder if the people who kind of say fisting is obscene, if they've actually seen it happen.
I doubt it. I think that it sounds violent and they assume that it's violent. They don't understand it, so they're scared of it. Mm-hmm. So they say, nobody should do this.
Yeah. And my partner and I were actually just talking about fisting between like straight cis like man woman couples and how that is maybe that has like a different like vibe or connotation than like two queer folk of whatever gender fisting,
right?
Like the idea of like this thing, this giant like man hand, right? Which I think the idea that like that all men have like these like really big hands, kind of doing this like really intense violent thing to this like, you know, precious small woman's like this precious small like white straight like cis woman's, you know, vagina.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that idea, I'm sure, also leads a lot of the thought of why fisting seems so impossible or so wrong.
Yeah, as if there's not a lot of different sized people.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me think about how bottoming is conceptualized as feminine because of heteronormativity, and feminine arousal in sex, in heteronormative conceptions of sex, is undervalued for the reasons that you were just talking about. With we think erection, it's obvious. We don't think erectile tissue in the vagina or the vulva or like in internal sexual anatomy, and it just kind of makes me think that when people are thinking about large insertables, it seems so violent or intimidating or scary or wrong, partially because people aren't thinking about what a body can do and how people who bottom sexually, people who are penetrated, whether, you know, need to be aroused in order to enjoy any size of penetration, but definitely, you know, the more aroused you are, the more you can take, the more lubricated you are, either by your body's lubrication or some wonderful bottle of lube, the more engorged and accommodating that you can become. So I, you know, it's, it sort of seems to me like it's very like bottom phobic to
make it such a big assumption,
which is so crazy because then like heteronormatively women are expected to desire and accommodate big cocks. That's like the ideal heterosexual coupling would be like a man with a giant hard attached cock and a woman that takes it.
Right. I mean, I think that it's from a lot of the customers that we both, I'm sure, interacted with, it seems like arousal actually isn't a thing that happens very often when people are having sex. And so, you know, and patience around arousal, right? And understanding that just because you want to have sex does not mean your body is at its peak for being penetrated or having anything like done to it. Like, you know, I feel like for my body, I have to be aroused to a certain point to like tolerate or to like want or desire like a mouth on like my nipple, you know? And so I think that there's probably just a lot of miscommunication and no communication around like what turns a body on and what bodies want and need in order to like have any type of sex or play. And, you know, and also so many people who, like, don't want to buy lube or, like, don't think they need lube or don't understand lube.
If you're doing it right, you don't need lube.
Right. And don't even understand, like, their own lube, right? Like, don't even understand, like, why their body makes lubrication, why it might be useful, what they need to make a lot of it, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't want to buy lube. You don't really want to care or talk about your own body's lube, but you want to have great sex.
Yeah.
Just doesn't all, doesn't, in my opinion, doesn't really match up.
Well, let's talk about whether bigger is better, because of course everybody's different, and I have to say, you know, I'm actually not, speaking of moods, I'm actually not always in the mood to take a really big insertable, but I'm often in the mood to do like a lot of different things, and that's just something that is on my weekly meal menu, right? Sometimes I see my friends taking really big dicks or fit or being able to go from like standing up and wearing pants to getting fisted in like 3 minutes flat, right? And sometimes it makes me feel like, oh, I'm not like a sexual superhero enough. Like, I'm kind of like okay with it now, but I've definitely gone through this like, oh well, I'm not like a super bottom, therefore there's like something like, you know, not as badass about me. And so I guess I just kind of want to talk about how everybody, big is relative.
Yes.
Big is subjective, and that it's not like always a goal that people need to be working towards, being able to take the biggest dick. Sometimes that's just not what your body does.
Exactly. I think every body, every individual has a scale of a panorama of possibilities for their bodies, right? Like, I, you know,
a pantherella of
possibilities. I feel like I should trademark that.
You
hold
should
on to that for the future.
You should.
Pantherella of possibilities. I really like that. But, you know, I mean, something that is, I mean, I think that is bigger, better for some folk, yes.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends.
For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
But not always. I think that, so I'm also biased, yeah. But I think that, you know, large implements and toys and tools, hands especially, can be really nuanced.
Yeah.
So it isn't just kind of having this big hunk
thing. Like a blunt instrument.
Right, exactly. Right. That's just kind of, you know, making you feel one feeling and that's it. It can be very nuanced. But I think there's something to be said for the challenge almost of smaller toys and tools and body parts, like having to work harder to like feel like if there's one finger inside of a body part, inside of like a cunt, for example, and the person receiving that finger is being challenged to like get off on that one finger or that like, or like to squeeze it really hard or to whatever, that's a really amazing challenge.
Yeah.
And also, like, it can be so precise. Like, precision comes with smaller.
And a lot of people who've gone through menopause also have to relearn how much they can take,
yeah,
right?
Most definitely. And I just... So better... I don't know. I wouldn't say better, but definitely not bad. definitely not bad. And I don't know, I think that... kind of just like challenging. I think I like the idea of finding challenge and nuance in both like big and small. But also like knowing that like for me, for my body, I don't like pokey things in my butt. I like a solid thing in my butt. So like my favorite butt plug ever is from a company called Enjoy. It's like their Pure Plug, and it's like I like the medium one. I like the large one. The small one's also nice, but even with the small one, it's not the smallest butt plug ever. But it's like a little teeny tiny butt plug. That was a total contradiction, but in my opinion, it's like a small butt plug. But there are smaller plugs than it.
Yeah.
But it's stainless.
It's so heavy.
Yeah, and so the stainless steel, the heft of it, just creates a bigger sensation.
Actual
toy is small, just kind of having something that gives you a really satisfying sensation can be important.
Well, right, because the pressure doesn't always come from size.
Right.
Sometimes pressure comes from weight or just where the pressure is being applied.
Most definitely.
Oh, I love those plugs.
Yeah, me too. I love Enjoy. They just do such good stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of size, I think you mentioned I'm no longer at Babeland, though I have lots of love for it. My last purchase before leaving was the 11. Yeah.
You gotta get that.
Yeah.
It's
just, actually, it's fun. It's super fun. Not my favorite thing.
Interesting.
It's like, I want it to be bigger. And not because because the thing is, I have toys that are smaller than it that I enjoy, like the Tantus General is a big, girthy 2.5-inch silicone dick. It's great. It's smaller than the 11-ish, but and lighter.
2.5-inch in diameter.
In diameter, right. Yeah. And so it definitely is silicone, so it's lighter, but it has a great just, like, shape and impact.
Mm-hmm.
I almost want the 11 to just kind of... I want it to be, like, a fist, a stainless steel fist. But I really like having it because, you know, size queen, collector of the large things.
Yeah, no size queen's toy chest is complete without an investment in an 11. And also, you could bludgeon an intruder to death with it if you so needed to.
I love impact with the 11. I love hitting people with the 11.
Oh, that's really
sweet.
I just
love, like, whapping.
Yes.
Yeah, just dropping it.
just drop just, it on someone.
So good.
It is amazing. That's so funny. Yeah, I mean, you can also talk about big, heavy things when it comes to other kinds of sexy things like impact play. But let's see. Now I'm distracted thinking about that. So I know what I wanted to talk about. Mm. I always felt that, so when I worked in a dungeon, there was always this really interesting thing that would happen where I would see clients assuming that different sized women. Assuming that different sized women could accommodate different size things. I think that there was this conception that bigger women had bigger vaginas and that petite women had petite vaginas. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, do you think that that's true?
I don't think it's true. Yeah. No. I mean, you know, there's a few years ago, some menstrual pad company, they introduced plus size menstrual pads.
Interesting.
Like the idea of a larger pad for fat women's gigantic vaginas. And so it's curious, right? Like the idea that, larger bodied people, people have larger vaginas, and it just definitely isn't true.
Yeah.
I think that while, pelvic bones and pubic bones can spread in a different way on larger sized bodies, some people can have, fleshier labias, and everyone can have labias, both inner and outer, of different sizes and different sized clits. But vaginal openings aren't necessarily, don't have a larger capacity on larger bodies or a smaller capacity on smaller bodies.
Yeah.
But I think definitely the shape and the size and the angle of the pelvis can play some role in what a body is able to accommodate, especially with very little lubrication or preparation.
Did you find that the rolling out of that product or the promotion of that product to be fat phobic or fat positive or somewhere in between?
I would say somewhere in between. I think that one issue that a lot of companies that are that create products to cater to the plus size market or to grab the attention of the plus size market, which by the way, fat people spend a lot of money on things that are for them, for whether it's clothes or the diet industry, right? Intense, all of the money of fat people. But I think that these companies that are trying to grab the attention of fat women specifically usually miss the mark in that the products are never designed by fat people.
Right.
Right, so it's never really things, whether it's clothes or these pads, fat people are never really employed to create them. So something's usually very wrong with them. Or to test them, exactly. Right. Or they'll do a very small test and then decide it's something that...
The idea is you're so grateful to have something catered to you instead of the world pretending that you don't exist or being disgusted by you, that you'll just buy it and not, they don't actually really care if it is better for your anatomy.
Right. And I mean, and I actually remember seeing one of these pads and the reality is that, a pair of underwear that's a size 20, they are going to be bigger than the crotch area is going to be bigger than,
called the gosset?
I think it's called the gosset.
I'm learning so many gosset, new words from
gosset,
you.
Gusset. The gusset is going to be bigger than the gusset.
That's like the strip of
fabric. And yeah. I know that because we sold panty vibes at Babeland.
Right.
And so I was always talking about how you could put the toy
in the gusset.
The gusset of the panty.
Motherfucker.
Yeah, you know.
That's the part that's the best for the used panties when you're if you need to put them on somebody's face. So it's like it's made for the T-zone right there. Yeah. Anyway, so you were saying about that's going to be bigger. It is going to be bigger,
and so I can totally understand how a product might need to have wings that are shaped differently. But the pad itself, this plus size pad. They just took a pad and they scaled it up, which isn't creating a solution.
No, it's not.
It's just creating a bigger pad. Exactly.
Right.
And so with that, just like the idea that, anatomy is so much more complex than what anyone can ever see by comparing people by their size, even if you see people with similar body types, and it's impossible to know what someone weighs or the shape of their pelvis or the shape of their cunt just by looking at them, without looking closely at their body. but
I mean, it's so funny how the standardization of size, whether we're talking about underwear or cocks, you know, dildos, or shoes or anything, you know, I mean, it's, capitalism is reductive, and it's like, well, this is a size chart, and you either fit onto it or you don't, and, you know, it just creates senses of inadequacy, which mm-hmm. then need to be filled with consumption, and, yeah, anyway.
It's like a cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I obviously feel a way about that, I lost my clever segue, but one of the other things that we wanted to talk about was just how bigger toys might relate to bigger bodies when it comes to sex, so do you want to speak to that?
Yeah. That's something I love thinking about. You know, I'm a fat bodied person and I love playing and having sex with other like fat and substantive bodied people. So even people who aren't fat necessarily, but just have bodies that are substantial in some way or another. Yeah. And so I think a lot about how larger bodies interact with different sized toys. Like my butt, for example, I have a deep set butt. So my butt cheeks, my ass cheeks are very wide out and out, both all directions. So it takes a larger size toy to, you know, get to my butthole.
Yeah.
You know, like the pony plugs or like bunny tail plugs. The bunny tail, that little poof, yeah. would be smack dab in between my ass cheeks.
What?
Exactly. Exactly. It would be like someone stuffed an actual bunny up there, which is
that's its own scene.
Yeah.
That's a scene. It's like an Easter scene.
So thinking about, you know, butt plugs that have longer stems for strap-on play, having like a harness that either sits higher up and definitely cocks that are longer so that they can accommodate kind of having to reach through larger thighs and a larger belly to get to another body part that might be behind like a larger belly and larger thighs. So a toy that has say 10 inches of insertable length might actually, for like my body from wearing it, it might actually have 7 inches of insertable length.
Right.
So that's something that I need to think about making my purchases.
Mm-hmm.
And also the idea of, things like vibrators. Like some of my favorite toys have like longer handles, which kind of create easier access to my bits. So like toys like wand style toys, like the magic wand and like the Lalo smart wand are really fantastic because of their long handles.
Yeah.
I totally recommend them. And also that kind of goes to the idea of like, you know, bigger vibration, stronger toys.
Yeah.
I also have really strong feelings about that too. And like for me, I just like kind of an impactful situation when it comes to my play, right? So big toys, big implements, strong vibration, strong impact, lots of feelings, is kind of how I like to go. So
bigger, better, yeah. faster, more.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a patriot.
More, more, more. Drill, baby, drill.
Ooh.
That's horrible, but great.
Yeah.
I meant drill like in the ass, not like for oil.
Well, I mean, yeah, you can drill for anything that's down there.
Yeah.
Yeah. do you feel like there's something that we haven't touched on yet?
I kind of just want to list off all my favorite large toys.
Yeah, hit me.
Oh my god. So I already mentioned my favorite big dick is the Tantus General. It's like I don't even know how big it is, but it's like 2.5 inches around, and maybe 9 inches of insertable length. It is amazing.
In terms of where you should buy things, if you want to say where to buy them, it should be Smitten Kitten.
Okay, sure.
They're my amazing sponsors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have the tan. I can just say
you can just list them and maybe I'll put it in the show notes or
yeah. Okay, so like I really love the Tantus General. It's like a 2.5 inch, 8 or 9 inches long, big kind of non-representational. So it doesn't really look like an anatomical penis dildo. That's amazing. It just makes a gigantic, amazing impact. I also really like that the New York Toy Collective, they make a really great pack and play dildo that doesn't suck. It actually is really great, but they have a new one that is actually girthy.
Nice.
So it's pretty stellar. I wish they would have made it a long time ago, but I have nothing, I can't complain too much. I think it's called the Carter, and it's really, really great.
Cool.
Yeah, those are like my two like things that have been on my mind recently. But like I want people to make bigger dildos, bigger interesting dildos.
Why do you think that people don't?
You know, with money, the idea that kind of producing a quality toy that is larger probably, I think, costs more money to like, you know, and just in silicone itself, like so it costs more money to produce.
Yeah, the bigger ones are more expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the fear that people won't buy it because it's gonna, not just because of the size, but because of the price point. So if you have, so say you're the first toy in your line is $90. If you can make a second toy that's the same price, people might buy it, but it's not gonna be the same price because it costs more money to put in, like to create the toy. So it's gonna be more expensive.
Right.
I think also because of what we talked about before, like the idea that people don't want larger toys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it seems like if you have the ability to have whatever size you want, that you would want, well, I would imagine one would want a variety, but
yeah, I'm a collector, so I feel like I like to have a full range.
Yeah. I'm finding myself also thinking about, the really obscenely sized toys that you see at a place more like Mr. S in San Francisco. And, I mean, it seems like in a way those sometimes, I mean, obviously, those are actually used to be inserted into people, hopefully with lots of lube and lots of warm up. But, it does seem like sometimes there's a little bit of a, like, big truck, big TV, big kind of thing to it where you're like wanting to show off. But I mean, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that.
A little show off, a little showy.
Yeah.
A little showy.
Little like kind of eyes are bigger than your mouth kind of a,
exactly.
Kind of a thing.
I mean, I will say I've always, like whenever I see like a small Christmas tree sized butt plug, I wonder. And like, I can imagine that I've actually, I know that there are people who kind of do their thing on that Christmas tree sized butt plug, but I just kind of, I wonder what that's like, because the tip, the smallest point is pretty gigantic, but you know, definitely warm up.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that this is sort of a loaded question, but do you think there's such a thing as too big?
That's a great question. A great complex question. You know, I will say I'll get the easy answer for me is like, you know, everyone probably has a too big.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
You know, from a retail perspective, from the perspective of someone who I appreciate when retail buyers and people who create product make smart choices. Mm. There are probably a lot of gigantic toys that just sit around that no one's really buying, or people only buy as gag gifts. And I feel like if you're producing a product to be a gag gift, I'm not really a huge, I hate that concept actually.
Yeah, I actually, I'm going to interrupt you and
yeah,
ask,
please.
Like that's interesting because I feel like I definitely remember, I've been thinking about it in the past 5 minutes that we've been talking. I remember this one couple that came in that was clearly very wealthy, that bought the Outlaw, mm-hmm. which is the biggest, girthy, longest, girthiest toy that Vixen makes. And who knows what they're actually going to do with it, but they were making a big show of it being a joke that was the one that they were getting. And it made me think, like, why is the idea, and the, I'm sure with the Bachelorette thing that you would get that a lot, like, why is the idea of a gigantic dick supposedly a joke?
Well, I think that at a store like Babeland, the Outlaw is the closest thing to the majority of offerings at other kind of, like, smaller, not
novelty.
Feminist novelty stores. That's exactly. Right. So at stores that are novelty stores, you can find gigantic pink dongs.
Right.
You can find, and also I think another thing is, and something that I had a really hard time with, this wasn't exclusive to Babeland, but I think it's just what says something about our culture, when people would come in asking for a big black dick.
Oh my God. Right? Oh my God, we haven't even talked about that.
And so it just kind of goes along with that. I think at novelty stores, you'll either find big pink dongs or big, gigantic black dicks. And it's supposed to be, like, haha, funny. Like, look at this, like, gigantic thing that we can smack each other in the face with that no one's really supposed to want. Haha.
Right.
But how many people probably buy those things and joke about it and then go home and use it?
Yeah.
And so I think it's very, it speaks deeply to, like, the idea that we're talking about of the prem teeny tiny vagina. Also super racialized, and definitely, like, just seeping in kind of a, like, a sex, obviously sex negative, but, like, a, just seeping in a, just a, I don't know, a really, like, juvenile, insidious, like, fear of pleasure, right? And, like,
yeah.
The idea of, like, who could want this, right? Like, who could desire this large implement.
But if your man's dick is too small, then he's not man enough.
Right.
That was sarcastic. Can you, would you like to speak to the novelty of the big black dick?
Yeah, I can try to. I think that, I think thinking of, like, the novelty of the big black dick, I think that's a lot of that falls on the shoulder, actually, of the people who make these novelties, right? And I think that there's the assumption that the companies that produce these novelties are just run by people who are hilarious, right? And they're making jokes. No, but they're people who, they're people who are trying to make money, right? So they have a really, they make a really conscious effort to produce a giant black dildo that they'll put in a package with, like, a picture of a black man on with, like, a loincloth. You know, they make a really conscious, they're making a really conscious effort to produce this item that fits into a stereotype that they're going to make money off of.
Right.
Right. And then there's also, I think that the taboo of, so I think the taboo of buying a sex toy. So if you're a woman and you're buying a sex toy, that's one taboo. But what's another taboo that goes with that? The idea of being, like, a white woman who wants to, like, you know, another sexual adventure is, you know, having sex with someone of a different race, right? So I think that that kind of fits into, like, multiple sexual fantasy taboos that we're not supposed to talk about, but we can make money off of.
And
right?
We can talk about them as long as we're making fun of them in a way that protects us,
right?
By saying, oh, this is not actually something that I would ever, like, deign myself to desire, which is why I can ridicule it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a really fantastic point. And I mean, I love black toys. And when I say black toys, I obviously mean, like, the color black, not like a skin tone, obviously, right? But, like, I feel like companies won't even produce black, like, higher end companies have a hard time producing black sex toys because I feel like it's seen as unapproachable, or maybe the idea of, I had a customer once at Babeland. She was buying a toy that came in pink, purple, and black, a really great high-end vibrator that looks nothing like a penis. It's like, it looks like a comma more than anything else. It's a very sleek, high-end design. But it's an insertable, and she balked at the idea of buying the black one because, and I think it was very racialized, right? It was like, oh, my husband would freak out if I got a black one. And I was just like, oh, I don't know. And I was like, okay, like, that's really intense, because this isn't like a black person's penis. This is a color. This is like a black pair of pumps. This is like a black handbag. It isn't like and I was just I wasn't really surprised, but it really spoke to the fear of having a not the fear, but like the taboo and the super like racist fear of like having like this like large black thing and what it says about you. It says that you're maybe it says that you like a black thing, oh my God. Which is something that no one wants to like, that white people don't want to have. They don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a true story, by the way. That did happen. And I just was like, who? And that's the same thing when customers would come in like saying, I want a big black dick. I was like, I am standing right here. I am standing right here looking at you. And you just like have... You know, and I'm not, you know, and so obviously, Babelin, like, we're not going to play that game with you. Like, no one is going to interact with you in a way that you're going to find funny or affirming if you come in asking for a big black dick. But I especially am not going to humor or affirm that inquiry.
Well, let me ask
douchebag.
Let me ask you a question, because, you know, probably my favorite sex toy of all time is the Cher. And the Cher that I have... which I actually got, for free on a set, happens to be black, and black, like a pair of pumps black. And, I sometimes ask myself whether wearing it at a play party, like a public, you know, semi-public, play party is fucked up because I'm white.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And I have another vixen that is brown, again, because it was the one that was there. And it was the size that, you know, the color doesn't make that much difference to me, because, you know, when it's inside someone, you can't even say what color it is. Right. But, like, you know, also, it was the material and the size and the shape and the girth that I wanted. And, like, you know, it could just as easily have been sparkly, but then sometimes I feel like, if I'm going to be wearing a representational dick at a party, that I should have one that is closer to my skin color, because it's, like, appropriative, because it's oppressive. Like, I would love you to actually tell me what you think about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that especially, like, because, okay, so when I'm in a larger play space, whether it's something that I'm a part of organizing or taking care of, or one that I care about or not so much, I think that I'm always really aware of people's experiences, right? Mm. So I say that if you are wearing not necessarily the black like pumps, but like a brown flesh tone cock, sure. I just, my question there would be wondering about someone else's experience with it, right? So like someone who, there are some folk of color who may not, like, it's a dick that you bought or a dick that you got, but others might wonder what your intention is, right? And there isn't really space to have a lot of those conversations in most play spaces.
Right. You're kind of forcing people who are conscious of it to think of it, which is why, that's why I don't do it, because I feel like it's inconsiderate for me to force someone to all of a sudden be like taken out of their space by being like, what is that person doing?
Totally.
You see what I'm saying?
I think that, you know, also because I'm such like a retail queen, like I like have a story for everything that involves like selling things. But like I never, and selling dicks at Babeland is where I encountered people's racism in the most intense way. Mm. And so like, you know, when you're presented with a style of dildo and it comes in different colors, I would always present them with all the options. So maybe whether it's three or two, maybe it's like a light and a medium, or a light, medium, dark, or like a light, medium, dark, darker, present them with all. And then of course, like white people folk would always say, I would want the lighter one. Mm. It's like, you know, or if we only had one that was like a dark skin, a dark color in stock, they would not want to buy that. Some people would, which is, I think, great, and like speaks to the idea of just kind of wanting the toy that you want.
Right.
like, whatever. Like, I think that I definitely was never, I was never offended. Like, I personally was never offended when, if a white person bought a brown toy or a brown flesh tone toy, just because they wanted it. Like, it's a toy that they want. They don't care about the color.
Yeah.
Was a totally kind of neutral to positive experience. But just, like, kind of the giant fear and the balking at the idea of, that you might have to buy a toy that's even a few shades light, darker than you are, right? Like, a toy that's, like, a tan or, like, a caramel, as sex toy companies love to say. Yeah. Like, vanilla caramel chocolate. You know, so I think it's all about kind of intention and, like, why you have that toy. But the only thing about play spaces is just like the idea of having to I think if you're an attendee at a play space, you don't have to manage everyone's experiences. But I think looking at it as like moving through the world as someone who cares about like oppression, not wanting to like trigger or like you said, yank someone out of a scene because of a choice you're making about like your toy usage.
Yeah.
And that for me kind of exists just in the realm of like brown flesh tone toys and not necessarily black like a pair of pumps toys.
Yeah, there's totally a difference. Mm-hmm. Thank you for speaking to that.
Yeah.
That is so fascinating that Dick's in particular are the place where the most racism came up at.
Yeah.
When selling sex toys.
Most definitely. Yeah. And also the place where a lot of people like had lots of questions again about size, right? Like the idea of wanting like a small one to start out with. Mm. And small is definitely subjective, right? It looks so many different ways, but I don't know. I feel like for a lot of people's like front holes or cunts, fucking with like a dildo, small is fine. Like it's fine. But you know, I don't know. I feel like people were often scared of toys that had curvature or like a G-spot curve or like any type of ridge, like all the fun things.
Yeah, see, well, and that's, you know, for me, like my favorite insertable is also an Enjoy toy, which is the wand. And for me, the fact that like I would rather have, and it actually goes back to what we were saying about the plugs, the stainless steel plugs as well, like the pressure is actually more and the curve mm-hmm. is more important to me than the size, me personally.
Yeah.
So like a small, and that toy is extremely slender, but then the ball on the end of it is very heavy. Yeah. And you can get the right like
an angle and hook and
exactly. Yeah. So yeah, a quote unquote small toy that has the right shape for my like anatomy of pleasure is like totally subjective, I guess. Anyway, so well, you have places to go and fabulous audiences to entertain, so thank you so much for going there with all of
thank
these different
you,
issues.
Tina, this was a pleasure.
And you were saying that you don't really have anything to plug. Is there anywhere that people can find you on the internet? Or?
No, that's not really. I mean, people can follow me on Instagram. You can find me at Pantherella. And it's a private Instagram by like adding people, and you can see pictures of my debauchery and fashion,
yes.
My nails and cats.
We've definitely, in my headphones, I've been hearing your nails.
Oh, my nails like click.
Yeah.
They're very long and very functional.
Ooh.
I feel like also, you know, I have really big hands. I love putting them inside of people, totally. But people are afraid of my nails sometimes, and it makes sense. I get it. Like, you, like, are afraid of the nails. But, like, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. When you say that they're functional, but they are very sleek.
Yeah, they're very sleek. They
like functional, like in terms of scratching.
In terms of scratching, but also in terms of like fucking. Like I can fuck someone with my hand and not like scratch them to pieces.
Femme power.
Yeah, I can also fuck like the gap between someone's teeth. With the nail. You know, there are lots of things that they do, but they also like they touch, they scratch. You can point to things.
Oh yeah.
Make a very like prominent noise. Yeah.
Well, you're taking up lots of space with those big nails, so. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 23. Future episodes feature Poppy Cox of Bike Smut Film Festival, erotica editor Rachel Kramer Bussell, and Girl Sex 101 author Allison Moon. Thanks to all our listeners for remaining loyal while we release one episode per month. I just turned in the manuscript for my sexting book to Quiver Press, and I'm still really fucking busy, so for the time being, enjoy this podcast once a month, and we'll see what happens later in the year. Special thanks to Liz Andrade for including Wired People Into That in her list of sex-positive podcasts that made her a sex geek. You can read her whole list on Medium.com. To stay in the loop, follow at Tina Horn's Ass and at Into That Podcast on Twitter. Subscribe and write us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Visit WirePeopleIntoThat.com to subscribe to our newsletter and listen to our ever-growing archive. Next time on Wire People Into That, professional dominant Morgana May and I talk about the complicated gender politics of cross-dressing.
I think the thing that's true is that we cannot talk about cross-dressing without kind of acknowledging that the gender binary is like Palmolive and we're all soaking in it. Mm. And it's really challenging for those of us that reject a gender binary and are very, you know, kind of, if not queer and trans savvy, then actually living in those communities.
Yeah.
And then playing with these themes and topics that can, in fact, really be gender reductionist. And so I work very hard to be mindful of that in my language and in my capacity for being gender inclusive in the way that I'm talking about things, because yeah, it's important. And also there will be times when I am like, oh yeah, I'm struggling to figure out exactly what the language to describe this is, because particularly in my professional practice, the overwhelming number of folks that I'm working with are cis men, right? So they're men who were born assigned male at birth and have continued to identify as men in terms of their own gender expression,
right,
who are interested in wearing women's clothes,
right,
and or occupying some kind of feminine persona or female identification in a time-limited, generally eroticized way, right?
Mm-hmm. Great definition.
So that would be the nut of the folks that I'm working with, who I adore.
So to speak. As always, Wire People Into That is produced and hosted by yours truly, Tina Horn. Our theme song is by Pine from Oakland, California, and we are exclusively sponsored by Smitten Kitten. Until next time, I'll be trying really hard to be more accommodating.
I'm Allison, and you're listening to Why Are People Into That? The podcast. Take two. I'm Allison Moon, and you're listening to Why the Fuck? Slow it down, back it up.
Once more.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.